All right, on today's episode, we are going to be joined on the back end by the Grand Rapids Gold Center and former Richmond big man, Grant Golden, who gives us a terrific interview. But on the front side, we recap our road trip out to D.C. and Richmond to go see GW and Golden's former Richmond Spiders. Not the best audio quality from us in this week's episode, as will be explained in the intro. A little tight for recording time when you're on the road, but we hope you enjoy it anyway. Maybe gives you a little bit of authenticity to our trip. Enjoy.
We build.
Hello and welcome to an all-new episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. We're wrapping up our A-10 road trip, recording this from gate A-12 at the Richmond Airport. So you might hear some background music here, just really settling the road trip theme. We got the song from Lindsey Buckingham where they're driving the car down the highway in vacation. Matt, I had a great time getting to go see the Charles Entertainment Smith Center and the Robbins Center this weekend. How about you?
Yeah, what a great weekend. Got to see two new A-10 gyms. Just fun games, getting to see new venues. And overall, I think one of my biggest takeaways, the fans at both buildings were super into the games. Even though GW, unfortunately for their homecoming, it wasn't very competitive, the fans were into it. And then a great time at the Robbins Center as well today.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess we'll start with Saturday. Getting to go to the Charles Smith Center and just have so many wonderful things to say about that place. First off, it's so much nicer and newer looking of a place than I think we all realized from TV. It looks almost brand new. It's certainly not. The fans were very good. The Georgia's Army continued to bring it. At one point, they hit a three, I think, to cut the lead to 24, and they got loud again. I would have loved to see what they would have done in a close game, but I mean they never gave up in a blowout.
Yeah, I mean that's like the best thing we can say, and I feel like a lot of other places when you're down, I think it's 50-20 at halftime, the fans are gonna pretty much check out. But the students were awesome. And yeah, like you said, the building itself too. I mean the scoreboard is awesome if it doesn't fall down onto the court. And luckily that hasn't happened for a few years now, but yeah, as for the actual game, I mean, Duquesne had, I think, their best defensive half in a while, just shutting down the Colonials. They were poking the ball away pretty much every time GW tried taking the ball to the hole. And then three-point shooting, I think we just kept looking at each other every time Quincy McGriff caught fire in the second half, and a lot of guys just having great shooting afternoons.
Yeah, everyone's going to look at the box score and want to talk about Duquesne's shooting, which was great. And it was better than normal, but we've known all season that the Dukes can shoot the ball. That was the best defensive game they've played all year. Their best half is still the first half against VCU, but they struggled and took a step back in the second half in that one. This game, they were just dominant on that end from the beginning to the end. Maximus Edwards got going in the first 10 minutes, and other than that, no one could get anything. The Dukes were jumping passing lanes. They were basically daring GW to throw pass after pass after pass, try to get the hockey assist. And as we all know, the Colonials do not want to do that. They want to go one-on-one with you, and Duquesne was so happy to let them do it.
Yeah, I just think the big takeaway, GW's been one of the more efficient offensive teams for most of the A-10 season, and Duquesne just made them uncomfortable. And after the game, we heard Coach Caputo talk about how the Duke's speed and athleticism just really overwhelmed his team. And I think that was pretty apparent after the first 10 minutes or so when GW went on a huge scoring drought.
Yeah, 18 turnovers for the Colonials. And that's despite the fact that the Dukes basically stopped pressuring them in the last 10 minutes when the game was already in hand. Although the Dukes continued to push it on offense. Like you mentioned, huge game from Quincy McGriff. Day-Day Grant had his first good shooting outing in a while. 18 points for him, 3 three-pointers that all came early in the game when they were starting to just pull away.
So moving forward from this game, are you worried about GW? Because they were 5-2 a couple weeks ago, now on the heels of a 3-game losing streak. They play Richmond on Wednesday this week, so a chance to get back on track at home. But all of a sudden, this went from a team we thought might have a chance at a double bye to suddenly playing some of their worst basketball the last 2 weeks.
I mean, I'm certainly worried. Their defense was never actually good. It was improved, and their offense was playing at such a spectacular level that they were picking up wins. The surprise is that the offense has largely struggled the last five halves. Duquesne shut them down, LaSalle did great against them, and they couldn't put the ball in the hoop the second half against Fordham. That'll bounce back, but I guess now the question is, how much does Bishop have left in him in terms of big star performances the rest of this year? That might be the difference between 9-9. I guess they could slip below 500, but I struggle to say that that'll happen. It could be the difference, though, between like a 9-9 and an 11-7 that would get them back in the double bye race.
I just think one of the issues that really became more apparent to me seeing this team in person and you watch them go through pregame warmups, this is just a shorthanded team right now. They have a lot of guys banged up with injuries, a lot of guys unavailable right now, and just sitting close by to the bench, there's not a whole lot of options. So we did see a lot of like Noel Brown, Quanzy Samuels getting into the game, and maybe they
Amir Harris played a ton.
He did too. So they did run as deep into the bench as they could have, but you got to wonder if that's going to be a problem down the second half of the season, just getting tired.
Yeah, and the one other thing I want to throw in from being there, Maximus Edwards, you start to realize in person, he glides. I think it's about the highest compliment I can give to an athlete of that level. Just everything he does is done with basically effortlessly. And you watch him, even versus Bishop, who obviously is a better player right now. But if you just watch those two for 3 minutes and ask someone who has no idea what their stats are, who's the better player, I think you'd say Maximus Edwards. James Bishop, there's some clunkiness to it, and it's obviously offset by his crazy toughness and confidence for his position. But Maximus Edwards just looks like he's going to be a great basketball player.
He just looked confident to me too. Like early in the game, he wasn't afraid to shoot the ball when he was getting open looks, and even though he missed a couple early, he was keeping George Washington in the game the first 10 minutes. So I think that bodes well for his future and for GW's future once he becomes an even more critical player next year.
Yeah, and we'll wrap it up with this. That was just a great day, and so a big shout out to the SID there, George Washington, Kevin Smith, for setting us up with our seats. To David Korn, Ashley Tobin, and Cameron Mays, who had us on the student radio halftime report. And to Ryan Paleo, who we got to meet in person and who is really deeply responsible for the GW student section being so good.
Yeah, I can't wait for GW to be good again soon. Like, I feel like it's coming. There's just a great culture around the stadium, just a lot of excitement, even though it had to be one of the worst games the Colonials have played this entire season. But you could tell people were still engaged, they were into the game and having fun, and that's just great as a neutral fan showing up and getting to experience that atmosphere for the first time.
All right, so we'll take it over to our Sunday game, getting to go to the Robin Center to see Richmond in a far more competitive game. They fell behind early against Fordham, but charged back to eventually take down the Rams. Biggest thing for me, Matt Grace was sensational. 21 points, and his speed was really a problem for the Fordham centers. As great as Cimbilla and Nowitzki are defensively, their strength comes in the paint, and Richmond from the jump was trying to see if they could get Grace to take care of them on the perimeter.
And how about 10 free throw attempts for Matt Grace? He went 9-for-10 from the line. I feel like he hasn't had that physical of a game in his career, probably. And he was aggressive, taking it up against Nowitzki and Cimbilla, just not afraid to go to the basket. Also knocking down a couple threes. So really, you know, for a while in the first half, he was the spark to Richmond's offense, one of the only guys that could get things going. And then down the stretch, too, we saw Tyler Burton kind of come alive, made a couple clutch threes down the stretch. He was also getting to the free throw line a lot. So, nice win for the Spiders to bounce back. It looked like Fordham in the first half, their defense was extremely stout, not giving the Spiders any early perimeter opportunities. And it looked like Fordham was going to keep the winning streak going for a while there.
Yeah, and Fordham looked too fast on the perimeter offensively for the Spiders early on in that game. And it all turned on one quartet of Spiders. It was when Grayson Burton, who were obviously out there for most of the game, but when they started playing with Andre Gustafson and Isaiah Bigelow together, and Marcus Randolph was in for a bit of that, Jai Bailey was in for a bit, but by that point, they were finally fast enough to stick with Fordham. And I guess the other piece of it, too, a lot of Fordham's best defenders, Nowitzki, Cimbilla, Kyle Rose, were all in foul trouble during that game. And you could see the intensity wane a little bit as they got deeper into the second half. Khalid Moore as well. I think all of them were a little afraid of picking up that fifth foul. And Fordham lost some juice, but it was a big win for the Spiders. And maybe the most impressive part, they kind of took out the Fordham energy. That team's carried themselves on their own adrenaline these last few games. In the second half, they didn't have that happiness and that buzz that we had seen carry them through in their last four wins.
It was a big momentum game, I think. Last 10 minutes, the Spiders outscored Fordham 27-11. And I think, like you already mentioned, bringing in Bigelow off the bench, Randolph brought a ton of energy. I thought Gustafson was really involved in the defense. The second half was just a much cleaner defensive performance for the Spiders. They were contesting just about everything at the rim. And where early in the game, Nowitzki, Cimbilla were just finishing everything, bullying Richmond's defenders a little bit, they weren't finishing those shots later in the game. And I think that was a lot of credit to Richmond's defensive intensity.
Yeah, and it follows the big theme of the weekend. The middle of the pack continues to tighten again. You have Richmond sitting in the pillow fight going into the weekend, beating a Fordham team that was in the double bye zone. We saw Duquesne hovering right above the pillow fight, beating a higher up GW team. We saw St. Bonaventure from behind in the standings take down Dayton. We saw Loyola beat George Mason. LaSalle beat St. Joe's. I guess basically everything was the lower beating the upper as these things continue to tighten. But we'll spend a few minutes here on the other two big games of the week. Although I guess we should shout out the environment in the Robbins Center. Another just really nice building, obviously much bigger than the Smith Center. They claimed it was a sellout. It was like 70% full.
That's generous.
Yeah, there was no way. But another nice new-looking building. Beautiful campus for Richmond. It just looked like your typical southern campus with all these beautiful red brick buildings. And you know what? One of the best things, we got to see the baby race at halftime. And for anyone who was there, that kid who won was... he was dominant. Went halfway and turned around twice and still won, just absolutely running away. That kid's got an athletic future.
If Matt Grace didn't score 21 points, that baby might have been the MVP. But yeah, just to echo your sentiment, really good environment at the Robbins Center, especially in the last 10 minutes of the game when Richmond was making their charge. I think our one complaint, though, walking around the concourse, there's a lot of pictures of great Spider moments, and they're all pretty much from the, like, 2009 through 2011 heyday. They just won the A-10 tournament last year. How about celebrate some of the recent success of the program?
Yeah, I mean, Grant Golden and Jacob Gilliar were there for 35 years. Like, you can't get a picture of the two of them celebrating the win, either the A-10 tournament or over Iowa. I'd like to see that next time we make our way there.
Yeah, I hope so, but overall, two really great stadiums we got to see for the first time, and that's just a lot of fun too. You get to see different things, I think, watching these teams in person that you haven't seen, and it's just different that comes through on TV.
So the long drawback of the week, obviously moving around, going to all these games, we did not get to soak in nearly as much of the overall slate, but there were still two big games that we managed to catch the bulk of. The first obviously being VCU taking down St. Louis to take over sole possession of first. And that was big enough that it would have easily led this episode any other weekend. But it all just starts with Ace Baldwin, 37 points, 12 of 15 from field goal range. And we had discussed, I believe in last week's episode, that it was possible that VCU could win the conference and Ace would not get on first team. Well, having this big moment and boosting up his counting stats, that is not going to happen now. And in fact, he has now put himself close enough stat-wise to be right in the heart of the Player of the Year discussion.
I think he's going to have a chance. And right now, with VCU having a game and a half lead in the conference, we see that a lot of times with the Player of the Year coming from the winning team. And Ace, I mean, I only caught the first half of this waiting for my flight, but first half he was incredible, hitting a lot of difficult shots when VCU's offense was bogged down. And he just continued it with what has to be one of maybe the best individual performance we've seen by an Atlantic 10 player this year. Overall, St. Louis, I didn't feel like played a bad game, but one of the big issues that we've seen throughout the season was just the turnover battle, where they only turned the Rams over 10 times. And normally you'd see that a lot more from the Rams, where they don't take good care of the ball. And I feel like overall VCU just took advantage of that. They got a lot of good shots, and they led a pretty efficient game on offense.
Yeah, and it sounds crazy to say, but St. Louis basically was out of this game with 3 or 4 minutes to go, despite the fact that Gibson Jimerson went 5 for 9 from deep, 24 points. His best games, the Billikens tend to dominate, but other than that, in an okay scoring game from Javonte Perkins and a good Jake Forster performance, they just weren't getting anything in the scoring department from anyone else. And if you like this a game, Yuri Collins played well. He had 11 assists, but to win their biggest, he has to score more than 4 points with how often the ball's in his hand.
It sounds like a Ben Simmons comment a little bit, but I think you're right.
That's a huge insult to Yuri. I apologize to him. He is so much better than Ben Simmons.
Oh, I don't disagree. But, yeah, I mean, you would have thought with Jimerson, I mean, in the first half, he was pretty much matching Ace Baldwin shot for shot and then didn't quite keep that up in the second half. But, I mean, I think more of a takeaway than St. Louis not playing their best this week is that VCU now owns wins at Dayton and at St. Louis. I feel like they're starting to separate themselves just a little bit, and we'll find out more because they play Dayton in the return game at the Siegel Center this week, so we'll see how the Flyers handle that. But I'm starting to feel a little bit more comfortable now that they own wins against the other two perceived top teams. They're starting to look more like a favorite going into Brooklyn.
Yeah, and they quietly still have a very difficult schedule that you wouldn't think. They haven't played Fordham yet. They haven't played GW yet. They have those two games still remaining. They've actually already knocked out their loan obligation to the, all of a sudden, third place St. Bonaventure Bonnies. But, yeah, VCU's the favorite at the moment, but if Dayton can beat them on Tuesday, that might flip.
And that's kind of been the theme of this entire season. I mean, especially even this weekend with a lot of unexpected results. But I think speaking of unexpected and the aforementioned Bonnies who are suddenly finding themselves in third place, coming off a nice 3-game winning streak, what a game for them to finally get the monkey off their back, beat Dayton at the Riley Center with a huge game from Chad Venning, who just dominated Dayton's bigs, one of the best front courts in the conference for most of this season. And all of a sudden, this is looking like a much improved team from about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and the Amtrak Wi-Fi was competent enough for us to get most of the first half of this game. Second half was a little bit of a different story, but we were able to lock in for long enough to see a huge tidal wave type swing in this one. Dayton dominating the paint early on, and it played right into, and apologies to either Little Bonnie X or SBU Unfurled, one of them mentioned this on their pod, how terrified they had been for months that their bigs were not quick enough to handle Dayton's, and they weren't. Tamani Kamara crushed them early on in the game. Kamara got his second foul, had to come out about halfway through the half. And the next thing we knew, Chad Venning, despite still having to go up against Deron Holmes, was absolutely running wild. And Dayton was just never able to get back to those one-on-one manipulations that they had going on early in the game. And without them, they couldn't crack the Bonnies.
And I think one of my most exciting things with this about the Bonnies, that I think we can say this is their best three-game stretch of the season. Darryl Banks hasn't played particularly well. He had 12 against Dayton, but I believe was shut out in the first half. Was held to single digits in the wins against Richmond and VCU. For a while, it looked like the Bonnies were going to live and die through Darryl Banks, and all of a sudden you have Venning stepping up on offense. Jan Farrell has suddenly become one of the best three-point shooters over the last couple weeks, and he's making a challenge to the Rookie of the Year award. This is becoming a little bit more of a well-rounded team, and against Dayton, all five starters got into double figures, so it's not as one-dimensional of an offense, and that makes it so much more difficult to guard.
The story after this game, and rightfully so, is the continued struggles of Dayton, but even when I thought that they were the heavy favorites to win this conference, I was more afraid of this game than any other, except for, obviously, the VCU and St. Louis battles. Just because of that environment, how well the Bonnies have played at the Riley Center all year, and the balance that they have to attack this defense. And because of that, I want to close this out talking about one big thing. Just St. Bonaventure, on a big three-game win streak, beating VCU, Richmond, and Dayton. Darryl Banks combined to score 25 points in those three games. Three made field goals in total. 2-for-10 against Dayton yesterday was his best performance, and I did not think the Bonnies could beat a good opponent if he did that. They've done it three times now.
It's a dangerous team, and you got to think part of it is a team chemistry issue where just having so many new faces, it took a long time to coalesce, and that's not surprising. But yeah, Mark Schmidt has things rolling right now, and it just shows you how fast in a season like this things can change on a dime, where for a while it looked like St. Bonaventure was almost a lock for the pillow fight, or at least no higher than 8th or 9th.
Yeah, well, now all of a sudden they are a double bye contender and just two games out in the loss column of first place. I don't think they'll be able to win the title, but they can come pretty close at this point.
And they have the tiebreaker, so you never, crazier things have happened, especially this year.
All right, a little bit of a quicker episode today. Anything else you want to do, you want to say to wrap this up?
I hope it sounds okay. We'll find out as soon as we stop recording, but have some Bon Jovi in the background right now, so we'll see how that comes through. But no, overall, just a really fun weekend, and I'm glad we got to see a couple new A-10 cities, A-10 campuses, and yeah, it just makes me even more excited for Brooklyn this year, getting to see a lot more of these teams in person.
Yeah, it was a wonderful weekend getting to go to these two places, all the people we got to meet at GW. And I actually want to close it out on a quick where he at, because I keep forgetting to do this, and we saw him flash through the headlines the last few days. Jaron Holmes over at Iowa State now, the one Bonaventure starter to transfer out who is thriving at his new school. You can look at the stats of the others, it's not great. But Holmes playing on a top 20 Cyclones team, 13.5 points a game, 3.5 rebounds, 3.3 assists. Those are basically the same as the stats he put up last year on a nowhere near as good Bonaventure team. His shooting percentages are up about 10%, both from 2 and 3. And so shout out to him. He has gone to a potential national title contender and continues to put up the same numbers. Yep. So, all right, that does it for this episode. We're going to give you the outro right now. Thank you for listening. Be sure to give us 5 stars on iTunes if you enjoyed it. Reach out to us on Twitter at @3BidLeaguePod, but do not go anywhere, because we have a terrific interview from a few days ago, so before Richmond's win over Fordham, with their former big man, Grant Golden. And once again, I urge you, do not go anywhere. Grant is having a great season with the Grand Rapids Gold in the G League, and he gives us a great interview here. All right, we're now joined by Richmond legend, center Grant Golden, who is now playing in the NBA G League with the Grand Rapids Gold. Grant, thank you for joining us.
Definitely. Thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it.
So we'll start here.
your stats just blow us away right now. 19 points a game, 11 rebounds, 4.5 assists in the G League. A pretty fantastic way to start off your professional career. So what's it been like in your first season as a pro? What's been the biggest part of the transition for you after playing college ball for what seemed like a good 20 to 25 years for most people?
Yeah, no, it was definitely weird being in a new setting for the first time in 6 years. And, you know, I think the biggest adjustment has been honestly the pace. What a lot of people don't know or understand about the G League is it is the fastest professional basketball league in the entire world in terms of the pace that they play at. So not that we didn't get up and down and get in transition sometimes at Richmond, but we were definitely more methodical and, you know, getting into our half court stuff. And, you know, we live and die by our Princeton offense. So just the up and down pace of it, obviously the athletic ability of all the guys. You know, you're playing against teams. Everybody was the best player on their college team. So obviously that's an adjustment to speed. But so, yeah, I would say the athletic stuff was just the biggest thing. But luckily I've been able to make some adjustments here and have certainly hit a stride. But it's been really fun and I've really enjoyed Grand Rapids and the team that I've been on. So that's certainly helped as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned the pace. I don't think anyone has ever accused a Chris Mooney team of playing too quickly.
Exactly. We're going to make sure that we get the looks we want, and we're going to play at the pace that we want.
So the biggest thing that stands out for me is the scoring. You're up a whole notch from your college days. Normally, it's supposed to go the opposite way. You leave college, Your scoring goes down, there's less opportunity. So what's been different in your game this season that's led you to be taking more shots and scoring more?
Yeah. You know, I think obviously, you know, I was there at Richmond for so long, you know, you play the same teams every year for the last 18. So, you know, scouting reports are to a T at that point for us older guys. And that certainly plays a part, but I think a lot of it too, is sort of what I was talking about, just a different league. You know, the defensive 3 seconds plays a huge role, especially for myself and how I like to play. You really can't pack that paint and sit in there. So I feel like roles are a lot more open. There's a lot more space when you catch it in that paint to make decisions and everything. But again, I think, you know, a lot of it was a stuff that I did in the off season, just trying to adjust in terms of being more aggressive. I think it was more of a mindset thing. You know, at Richmond, we ran our offense and we had so many guys that we could score, that could score. Obviously we have that here as well, but you know, I've been scoring here as of late and it's just been that mindset of being aggressive. And that's something that I really tried to work on in the off season. That's something that the people that I worked out with really trying to instill in me and just making sure that I'm always in that aggressive mindset. Being a big that can pass, I tend to get a little passive at times and, you know, sort of look for the pass first, but it's got to be try and score first so the pass opens up second. So that's sort of the thing that I've tried to just switch with my mindset.
And so going back to the offseason too, I always think it's interesting to hear from former players, but that can be kind of an uncertain time where you're moving on from college basketball and it's going to be a different future coming up. When did you really know what your plans were going to be? Like, was it your goal from the start to either go to the NBA or the G League, or did you consider any overseas options at that time?
Yeah, no, I mean, this opportunity with Grand Rapids and with the Nuggets was really last second. I had pretty much decided that I was going to go overseas. I wasn't sure where. There were a couple options that were floating around, but I had pretty much made up my mind that that's what I was going to do. And you know, I felt like my game catered to that style of play over there and that I would be able to have a lot of success. And, you know, sort of last second, all throughout the pre-draft process, the Nuggets had expressed interest in my skill set and everything. And they kind of came around right at the end, right when I was trying to make the decision in August, and brought this opportunity to do this Exhibit 10 and come to training camp with the Nuggets and play for the gold. And I just felt like, with my skill set and what they do with Jokic, they pretty much told me that they wanted to try and mimic the offense and everything that they ran with the Nuggets. And they felt like I was, you know, going to be the guy that would be able to do that. So that's something that really intrigued me. And I just felt like I would be able to have some success there. And luckily I have. Credit to my teammates and coaches for, you know, the improvements that we've made throughout the season, and they've been putting me in really good spots, and it's just been a really good situation all around.
Yeah, when I saw that Denver was the team that picked you up, it made so much sense immediately. Not just Jokic in the way that offense works, but because your game at Richmond always reminded me a lot of when Mason Plumlee was in Denver backing up Jokic. And he's really the one backup big that they've had in the last few years who brings that same level of passing, power, and rebounding that you've always had in your game. So it seemed like an interesting fit there.
For sure. For sure. It's funny you say that too, because, you know, I think people don't really think of Mason Plumlee as a passer, but he was a extremely good passer, especially when he was in Denver. So I actually got the opportunity to watch a lot of film and stuff when I was out in Denver. They showed me a lot of stuff on him and everything. And obviously being with Jokic and training camp and everything, getting to learn from him was awesome. But definitely they've created a culture, and the way they play is certainly something that's unique in the NBA right now. And it's really awesome to see, and I'm glad that I sort of get to try and mimic that here for the G League team.
So take us into the building in the G League here a little bit, and the relationship that the franchise has with the Nuggets. Is this something where you can see the impact of the big league team all the time, and the way they kind of set up the coaching staff, run their offense, because they're not only evaluating you as a potential future option at the center position, but your teammates are guys, if they can succeed with you passing around them, then that means they could potentially succeed as shooters and defenders with the NBA squad.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, you know, when you're in it and you're on the road and playing games and you're in Grand Rapids, like, you very much don't really think about it in terms of how much connection there really is. But, you know, I know our coaches, our coaching staff with the Gold are in constant communication with the Nuggets front office about sort of what they do, what they see in us, and, you know, things that we need to improve on, things that we've done really well. And that's for all our guys on our team. So like you said, there's definitely that connection there, and sort of, you know, understanding that we're being evaluated every day for, you know, something that potentially the Nuggets could bring to the table. So
in the G League so far, how many times or have you gotten to encounter any of your former A-10 opponents? Or I'm just curious, like, what the crossover is playing against guys that you saw a lot of in college.
Yeah, no, definitely a couple. Just last night, played against Jalen Crutcher. We play them again tomorrow here in Greensboro. Charlie Brown was up in Grand Rapids. He's with the Delaware Blue Coats. So definitely, I mean, I'm sure there's more. I can't even think of them off the top of my head right now, but it's really cool, especially, like you said, guys that are specifically from the A-10. I mean, I'm here. Kellen Grady's on our team here. We live together up in Grand Rapids. So, I mean, the A-10 is definitely showing out in the G League, but it's really cool to get to compete with and against those guys again.
Have you gotten to play the Hustle yet?
I have not, but that is coming up, I think, somewhere towards the end of February. We are making the trip down to go play the Hustle.
Yeah, not only a chance against your old teammate Jacob Gilliard, but depending on where he's at in the roster shuffle, could be another chance to play Vince Williams, who's NCAA tournament hopes you ended pretty unceremoniously for VCU last year.
No doubt. And I know, I'm sure Gilly's reminded Vince of that quite often together during their time in Memphis. But it'll definitely be fun to go down there and play those guys at the end of the month.
So you're a Virginia guy by birth, absolutely, grown up, and then obviously stay home, go to Richmond. What's it been like living in Grand Rapids in the extra layer of cold? And is there anything cool about the city that maybe people don't know about that you found?
Yeah. Now it's been awesome. This is the first time except for 2 years in Charlotte, North Carolina, I lived in Virginia my whole life up until this point. So the cold has certainly been a huge adjustment for me, but no, it's been really nice. Grand Rapids is a cool city. Actually very similar in Richmond in terms of the downtown area and the size of it. I think Michigan, I was just talking to somebody, our owner, the other day, Michigan's population as a whole is going down. Grand Rapids is the only city in Michigan where the population is increasing. So it's a really cool city, lots to do. We're like 10 minutes. Our apartments are about 10 minutes outside of downtown. So it's been really cool, and I've enjoyed my time there.
So looking ahead, when you start to think about your career 2-3 years down the road, is the goal the NBA? Are you thinking about other leagues and places that could potentially be cool to play in? Like, what's the track that you're trying to put yourself on here?
Yeah, no, I think obviously everybody, especially in the G League, everybody's goal is to get to the NBA. So that's certainly the number one goal above all else. But, you know, there's great basketball overseas, so many different leagues, so many different countries that have really grown and really created a high level of competition. So, you know, I'm just hoping to learn as much as I can here, soak it all in, try and put myself in the best opportunity to make that jump to the NBA. But whatever it may be, just making sure I get ready for whatever league I might be in. And like I said before, you know, I'm certainly, I was pretty much dead set on going overseas. So I'm not against that. And, it's something that I look forward to if that's what it comes to in the future, and just excited for new opportunities overall. So we'll see what happens.
So we'll turn it over to a guy who is certainly going to be playing in a good professional league either next year or the year after, depending on how he decides to treat a potential fifth year. But your longtime teammate, Tyler Burton, mm-hmm. How would he fit into these G League games that you're playing in right now?
Yeah, no, I think Tyler would fit well. You know, he's got the athletic ability. There's just so much length and athletic ability in the G League. And obviously he fits that prototype. I think Tyler is really a lot of what the NBA is looking for in terms of size, capability, shooting ability, everything of that nature. And I know he had great workouts this past summer, and he got some really good feedback, and I know he's going to have another great, if this is that's what he decides to do. I know he's going to have another great summer, and whatever he decides to do, he will certainly be successful. And I think he will definitely put himself in position to have that opportunity, whether it's through the G League or whether it's on a roster right away. I think Tyler Burton has a good shot at getting to the NBA, for no doubt about it.
Yeah. And he certainly could have gone professional this year. He could have left and transferred. I'm sure basically any program in the country would have wanted to have him. And especially with a lot of his longtime teammates graduating, like yourself and Jacob Gilliard. But that's the story of Richmond. Even in this era of the transfer portal, he's been there for 4 years. You were there for 6. Jacob Gilliard was there for 5. Nathan Kao was there forever. Andre Gustafson, Matt Grace. These good players just keep staying. What is it about Richmond that kept you there and it just continues to keep these good players?
Yeah, you know, that's all credit to Coach Mooney and the culture that he's built. Guys love playing for him. You know, the staffs that he puts together, obviously it was pretty consistent while I was there. And we had some turnover at the end, and they've got some new guys this year. But every year, no matter who it is, he puts together a great staff. A really enjoyable group to play for. And, you know, we talk about it all the time, but we really enjoy the guys on our team. We enjoy hanging out together. We enjoy playing together. So that's, again, just the culture that they've built. And luckily we've been able to recruit guys that have really bought into that. And we've had a lot of good players that have been there and have bought into that. And like you said, it's just sort of turned into what Richmond is and sort of how things roll for us. And honestly, it's really cool to see, because I think especially moving forward here in the NIL era and everything like that, you won't see a lot of that anymore. So I think that's what makes our group even more special, because I really don't think we'll see something like that for a long time.
Yeah, and going back to, like you mentioned, how Richmond was such a special place all the years you were there, but going back to when you were getting ready to go to college and figuring out where you wanted to play, what was it about the school or the basketball program that got you there in the first place?
Yeah. So when I made my decision, you know, I sort of went in with the mindset I wanted to find the highest level of basketball, where the highest level of basketball meets with the highest level of education. And obviously Richmond definitely meets those standards. And then when we went down and, you know, Coach Mooney got involved and started recruiting and everything, we loved him. We loved his staff. He was super honest with me in the recruiting process. You know, there was no promising me minutes or playing time or anything like that, which I really respected. And, you know, just the way he presented himself and the things that he told me, sort of, you know, that's the place where I wanted to be. And, you know, being from Virginia, obviously that was another big part of it, but overall, just everything he puts together there, from the staff to the players that he recruits, everything is just top notch.
So I'm going to ask you here, what's your favorite Chris Mooney story that you could tell us on the pod?
Oh man, favorite Chris Mooney story that I can tell you on the pod. Man, there's so many good ones, and obviously I was there for so long, so like I'm just like trying to like recollect on everything. But honestly, more of a heartwarming kind of thing, Chris Mooney, first person in the hospital after I collapsed my freshman year was him. Like right after the game, you know, he came right over. I don't even think they talked in the locker room after. He was there pretty much when I had sort of really settled down in the emergency room and everything. And, you know, I think that, you know, being my freshman year, and that was sort of the epitome of who he was and who he was throughout my entire time there. Like anything we ever needed off the court, anything we ever needed help with, he was always right there. You know, if we had to call him at 2 o'clock in the morning for whatever reason, just to talk, he would answer the phone. Like, and people don't understand that. And people don't really get to see that side. You know, they just see him as the head coach for Richmond and judge him off of wins and losses. And, you know, that's what it is in coaching. But when you get to see him as a person and on that other side, he is really a top-notch human being.
Yeah, I've had the chance to chat with him for really just 2 minutes one time, but he really comes across as just such a friendly, nice guy. So it's great to hear that that's how he really is.
For sure.
So we'll carry on with some other Richmond stuff. I want to ask you, because this has been one of the most interesting things that I've witnessed this year. Andre Gustafsson, you played with for a long time. He is basically the only person in basketball history who has the combination of super high minutes, very good shooting numbers, and never shoots the ball. Like, why does this guy not take more shots? He's actually a decent shooter.
Yeah, no. You know, Goose, especially the last couple years when all our guys were there, you know, we were really relying on him on the defensive end. He was guarding the best player a lot of the nights, either him or Gilly. You know, and it was kind of, we had 4 1,000-point scorers, 2,000-point scorers running around out there. So, like, his shots were very, very limited and selective. So, you know, I think that's sort of the mindset that he's gotten into and everything. And I think he's shown some strides. There's been some games where he's definitely been more aggressive than others and everything this year. But, you know, I agree. I hope he finds that aggressive mindset here down the stretch, because Spiders can use some points for sure. And he can definitely help us on both ends of the floor down the stretch here.
So as we're recording this, the Spiders are on a 4-game losing streak. By the time people hear this, they will have actually played against Fordham for a weekend game. So, but just kind of taking that out of the equation, what do the Spiders have to do to get things back on the right track here?
Yeah, I think they just need to get, you know, it's obviously easier said than done, but they just got to try and find themselves, get a win here to get their confidence back. I think that's really tough when you go on a losing streak in college basketball. You start overthinking things. You know, there's so much noise and everything, and you start questioning yourself and the shots you're taking and what you're doing offensively and what you're doing defensively. And there's just so many things running through your mind when you lose games, especially a couple in a row. You just got to try and get one by all costs and really get your confidence back. Once you can get a W under the belt, some of that confidence starts to come back and everything. So they just need to try and scrap one out. They've struggled on the offensive end. So hopefully some guys can, you know, get hot here and start knocking down some shots. But yeah, that's really all there is to it. Like having good practice, preparing, and just doing anything you can to get a win, to get that confidence back.
So I think one of the fun stories from this year around the A-10 was that your younger brother, Bryce, transferred to a school that was joining the conference. I'm just curious, did you give him any advice on like scouting reports or things to look out for when he's going to certain schools on the road or anything like that?
Yeah. He's, I talk to him every day, but he certainly asked me, whoever it may be that they're playing that day, you know, what to look out for this guy or whatever it is. So it's actually been really cool to be able to have those conversations with them. And, you know, now he's going and experiencing, you know, St. Bonaventure on the road and all this different cool stuff throughout the A-10. So it's been really cool to have those conversations with them. And I won't be giving them any advice when they come to the Robbins Center, but it's been cool for sure.
And speaking of that, when you were at Richmond, of course, you got to play everybody on the road throughout your career. What were some of your favorite stadiums to play in?
Yeah. Obviously Bonaventure and VCU were two. Obviously the crowds are incredible, smaller arenas. So they, you know, pack it in there, really loud, great environment. For me, and people always laugh about this, but I always played well there. Tom Gola Arena has a special place in my heart. I don't know why I always played well there, but that place can do no wrong for me.
Maybe some love for high school gyms took you back to a dominant time in your career. But
that's what I told Gilly all the time. I said, I feel like we're just back to playing AAU here.
And the great thing too, you guys went on the road last year and beat LaSalle on the road, so you got to see the neon sign in the flesh, yep, which is great. And yep, the smoke machine exactly. Too.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
So we jumped the gun while I was checking the schedule. Only a week and a half away from Loyola coming down to the Robbins Center. Mm-hmm. So who are you rooting for in that one?
Man, I'm going to try and be as impartial as possible, but I'm pulling for the Spiders. I told Bryce before the year started, I'll root for Loyola Chicago every single game except for that one. So I think I'm pulling for the Spiders.
All right, and we'll close it out with this, because there's a story from last year that I feel like has been kind of put together through various bits and pieces. You hear something from Coach Mooney, you hear something from one of the guys. I don't think anyone's told the full tale. So I want to get your take. I want to get your take and the memory that stands out the most from you of the journey from the arena back to the hotel for the selection show after you guys won the A-10 title last year.
Man, it was certainly one to remember. But obviously we were back in the locker room for a while and celebrating, and everybody sort of got showered up and got all their pictures and everything like that. And we all loaded up on the bus and they tried to start it up, and I heard it just cut out and everybody just started kind of looking around at each other. And bus wasn't working, so they were like just filing people as an Uber. So we were running up the ramp that goes down under the Cap One Arena. We were running up the ramp as Ubers were just pulling up and we were just hopping in. I think it was Gilly was running and carrying the trophy with them. So we just got everybody in Ubers and made it over. And I think we got there literally 10 minutes probably before we got announced. Everybody was already over there at the hotel, all the fans and everything. So it was certainly a funny experience and one to remember. And I'm just glad we made it by the time the Spiders got called.
Yeah, I was told that Marcus Randolph was in the middle of the street fending off cars trying to get them to stop with the trophy.
Oh, yeah.
Like trophy holding it up to halt people.
Well, after once you get that trophy, like obviously everybody's trying to get their hands on it. So multiple people had it during the time. But yes, Marcus Randolph was in the street in his New Jersey kind of way, trying to get cars to stop. It was funny, man. But at that point, anything goes. Anything goes.
All right, Grant Golden, hopefully for your sake, the Spiders can turn things around here in these next few games, maybe even get a big win over Loyola Chicago. And good luck to you with the Grand Rapids Gold. You're having a great season so far, and we thank you for joining us.
Definitely. Thank you guys. I appreciate you having me on. Dude.